In response to much popular demand, I see your comments all the time. So I see that a lot of you want a proper episode on the electoral bond, anonymous electoral bond revelations. Now you know that we've featured this issue repeatedly on Cut the Clutter. There have been several in the past, going back to 2019. Even before that, when the bonds were notified, before that, when the bonds were cleared in the budget of the previous year, bonds were notified, then the Supreme Court judgment, the first interim judgment of 2019, and subsequently. This has featured several times. Also, on the day this judgment came out from Supreme Court in February, saying that this should be made public, then again the Supreme Court order on State Bank of India's application that they wanted time till June 30. For each one of these, we had a full episode of Cut the Clutter. What we haven't done as yet is, one, since the revelations came out or since this data began to get public. Now, all the data is not yet public because matching of the numbers of the bonds with the encashers or with the recipients has not fully taken place. That will take place once State Bank of India gives all the bond numbers, all matched, along with an affidavit saying that they are hiding nothing, that they've revealed everything. That will happen now. At the same time, we now have quite a lot available because we know many companies which bought these. In fact, we know all the companies that bought these bonds. Some can be done through conjecture in terms of who received them, and some parties have made a public disclosure as well. That's why today we are featuring this again in this episode of Cut the Clutter. And as I sometimes do, when I think that something is too complex for me to understand, or there are people in our team who understand this better, I have two fine people with me for this episode of Cut the Clutter. So TCA Sharad Raghavan is our deputy editor for economics. You see his column, Standard Deviation, every fortnight, every other week on the print. And you see him, see his stories all the time. Apurva Mandhani, who you know well, she covers the law for us. She's covered many aspects, the legal aspects, particularly the judicial aspects of the electoral bonds issue. In fact, even many of the episodes on which I've spoken in the past, I take inputs or education from her and Bhadra Sinha, so I understand the nuances of the law. So what we are going to do today is, I'm going to change this pattern a little bit. I'm also changed the definition of Cut the Clutter a little bit. Usually we say on Cut the Clutter, we don't give opinion. And if we give opinion, even if I do lapse into opinion, I immediately qualify it, saying that this is opinion. What's happening today is that these two will give you the facts and they will declutter the basic story. So I might ask them some questions. They will anticipate many questions and explain those to us, just as I do with Cut the Clutter. My role would be to give opinion. So they will raise questions with me and I will actually give opinion. In any case, I will interject at any point and give opinion. So this is now a hybrid Cut the Clutter today. So these two have the facts and they unravel, they lift layers from the story, a very complex story, and I am there to hold forth and give my gyan to all of you. So here we go. Apurva, what exactly has happened now? Just give us a blow-by-blow account of the battle in the Supreme Court.
Sure. So I'll start from the February judgment, of course. On 15 February, the Supreme Court declared the bonds unconstitutional, asked the SBI to stop issuing the bonds immediately and went a step ahead and asked for details around these electoral bonds. It asked SBI to give all the details by 6th of March to the ECI, which was then supposed to publish these details within the next week after 6th of March. But since then, it hasn't been as smooth as it seemed in that February 15 judgment. Just 2 days before the 6th March deadline, the SBI filed an application before the Supreme Court asking for more time till 30th June, as you mentioned in the intro. And that's since then, I think it's been a bit of heated exchanges in every hearing, because even on the 11th March was when the hearing happened, and on SBI's application, and the court was miffed. It's said that it asked SBI ki your affidavit just asks for more time. You haven't told us what you've done so far since February 15, since we asked for that data. And the court said, no can do, we want that data. Of course, during that hearing as well, Harish Salve, who was appearing for SBI, said that the thing is, we have two sets of data. There are silos, one on the donors, the purchasers, other on who redeemed bonds. So do you want us to match the data? But the court said, just give us whatever data you have. You don't have to match it. The SBI then finally released that data. But what happened was, when it released the data, it hadn't released the alphanumeric codes attached to every bond. Now what that does is, even though we have two sets of lists, if that specific alphanumeric bond attached to each bond is revealed, then the matching can be done on who purchased the bonds and then who redeemed that same bond. So for that, then there was another hearing on Monday, actually, where the Supreme Court again said that, you know, this shouldn't be the process here. We shouldn't be asking you for everything. The petitioners shouldn't be coming back to us asking for every single detail. And our assumption was that the SBI will give us all details when we ask for disclosures. It called it selective disclosures. And again, there was an exchange with Mr. Harish Salve, senior advocate Harish Salve, and the court said that we need that data. And effectively, the court also asked for an affidavit from SBI chairman and the managing director, which should say that they have given all the data, they have disclosed all the data that was in their possession. That is what has happened so far with regard to data after 2019. Of course, there was data before 2019 as well. If we want, we can talk about
please
that
go
too.
Ahead. Huh.
So now there was an interim order in April 2019 where the court asked political parties to submit all its data on electoral bonds to the ECI in a sealed cover. ECI submitted it to the Supreme Court. Now, during the past few hearings, when SBI had asked for more time, the court also asked ECI to disclose those sealed cover documents. Now, curiously, of course, the court felt that if ECI has given those documents to us in a sealed cover, it would have copies. But ECI filed an application saying, we didn't have any copies. We had given you all the data. So now please give us that data back so that we can make copies and then upload them. So that's what happened after that. And now ECI has also published data between 2018 to 2019. This was self-disclosure data by political parties. But again, very few parties have actually disclosed details of donors. Not every party has disclosed that. Again, there was another application filed by petitioners for disclosing the alphanumeric codes of the electoral bonds between 2018 and 2019. But the court refused that, saying again that 2019 was when it had put donors on notice, probably, that this might not stay anonymous in the future, depending on our judgment. So the court was careful there. But this is the entire set of data that we have right now. We don't have the alphanumeric codes yet, but the court has asked SBI to disclose
those. So that will come. Now, this is the first time in my life, and I've been around a lot longer than both of you put together as working journalists. It's the first time that I've seen a Government of India office saying they didn't keep copies of something.
Right.
Usually, even if you go and tell them your name, you have to give it in triplicate, if not more, and attest it and put rubber stamps and dhobi marks on everything. So this is a little bit, I would say, shady, if I may say. It sounds like that Election Commission had all this data, all this documentation. They just gave one set and they didn't keep one copy. Nevertheless, the fact is that the court has been quite pushy on this, and they have not let them get away with
on
anything.
Any count,
and
yeah.
The State Bank now, you think they have no choice but to come clean with everything? Or can they still hide something?
I don't think they can anymore because of the future repercussions of that affidavit, probably, because the chairman and the MD has to give an affidavit saying we have disclosed everything. So in the future, if it comes that they haven't, then
that becomes perjury plus contempt.
Exactly,
right?
Exactly.
Although those sentences might run concurrently, but it's not pleasant for a Sharif Aadmi to be locked up even for a day. Sharad, we know that this matching is yet to happen.
Yes.
First of all, how does it make State Bank of India look? India's oldest, the most respected bank, and a greatly respected bank globally.
It's not a good look because first of all, when SBI asked till June 30th for time, and then the Supreme Court said nothing doing, you aren't getting any more time. Within a day, they gave the data. So why were they asking for 4 months, additional months? This doesn't look good. It's a respected bank. It should stick to banking is what I feel. It's our largest bank and it has a vital service in providing banking to your rural, semi-urban, to basically the unbanked.
It's also a bank to the government of India.
Yes.
Right? I mean, government of India, it runs, the credibility of government of India rides on the bank and vice versa.
Absolutely. And this just doesn't, it makes it look, and SBI, it's been talking a lot about its digital banking and how it's going online with everything. But suddenly here it's saying that we just can't provide this information. It's not a great look.
So the data that's come out so far, tell us some highlights, because you've been studying this and also helping our other reporters do this too.
Right.
Tell us some highlights.
I will get to the highlights, but the first point I want to make is that SBI still hasn't made life easy, because the data, all of it is of course in PDF form, which is immensely difficult to analyze. You have to first convert it to Excel, and especially the data that came out on Sunday, which was the pre-2019 data, that was photocopies of physical copies. So
just
converting it to Excel means a lot gets lost. So then you have to match between this. It didn't make any of our lives easy just because we had the data. But now that we had the data, we did the analysis. Number one, of course, is that the BJP was the main beneficiary of the electoral bonds. It got about almost 7,000 crores. With, interestingly, the maximum, about 2,500 crores coming in a single year, 2019-20, which of course was the election year. The second highest beneficiary, again interesting, was the Trinamool Congress, which got 1,397 crores through electoral bonds. After that, only after that comes the Congress, which got 1,334. The interesting thing is that the DMK, which received 656.5 crores through electoral bonds, received 509 crore, or basically 83% of DMK's donations came from a single company, which was Future Gaming and Hotel Services, which of course is also the largest purchaser of electoral bonds overall. But the interesting point here is that even though DMK got most of its money from Future Services, Future Gaming didn't spend most of its electoral bonds on DMK. DMK donations were only 37% of what Future Gaming bought. The rest of it went to other parties. I mean, what these other parties are, we'll find out once.
So 80 plus percent of what DMK received overall came from this lottery king.
From this one.
Right? But this was only about one third of what he actually gave away.
Yes.
This means he gave away a lot to other parties also. And it was in this process, if you see the dates on which he's buying these bonds, in between he's also routinely getting raided.
Yes.
By central agencies. Right? So do you draw a connection there?
It is, of course, nothing is... We can't prove anything because you can't draw these direct links. But there's a lot of, you can make conjectures, and you donate to the government and then you get raided, or you donate to the government after you get raided.
Or you donate to DMK and then you get raided. So all that has to be established once
Absolutely.
You know the numbers.
Yes. But it says a lot. It talks about, it can give you some insight on whether the ruling dispensation is being vindictive or whether it's rewarding you. So basically, where you stand vis-a-vis the ruling dispensation.
Until we have the numbers and dates, both sides can say what they want. So
Absolutely.
Opposition can say that, oh, they were using the agencies to arm twist them. Whereas the BJP people are saying, see, if they were giving so much money, why would we be raiding them? Mm. Right?
Right.
So all that goes on, and that can only be clarified once.
Yes.
Tell us some other highlights, and maybe I can then hold forth a little bit on the political implications.
So on the political side, I mean, these were the largest recipients. The fourth largest after the BJP, the Trinamool Congress, and the Congress was the Bharat Rashtra Samiti, BRS. It received also 1322 crore, which is quite close to the Congress and to the Trinamool Congress. But now, while we can say that the political parties have been quite smart in how they've been disclosing this data, we can also see that the companies have been equally smart in how they've been purchasing the electoral bonds. It's not only Future Gaming amongst the large donors. Future Gaming seems to be one of the few that used its own, the parent company, to buy the bonds. It wasn't kind of, routing it through subsidiaries. But I did this analysis and I looked at the top 20 companies and saw that several of them were subsidiaries of other companies. So once you add them together, you find that the parent companies are actually substantial donors, but it might look like these small companies are.
So that is called, that kind of work is called lifting the corporate veil, because a company can have float another company, which can float another company. So you can have maybe 3, 4, 5, 6 degrees of separation. But then good journalists, good activists and others, then or good forensic accountants, they keep on lifting the corporate veil until you reach the original owner, isn't it? That's absolutely how it's done, and that's why it's taking more time.
It is, absolutely, because a lot of these are small companies that are of course not listed. If they were listed, life would become a lot easier because they have to mandatorily make a lot of disclosures. All of their information is public. But these are small companies. Not all of them have public records on turnovers and things like that. But we have some examples. So we know that Megha Engineering was the second largest purchaser of electoral bonds. But if you just look on the face of it, it looks like it's a distant second to Future Gaming. There's a difference of 400 crores between them. But if you add Megha Engineering's subsidiary, which is the Western UP Power Transmission Company, which bought 220 crores, then suddenly Megha Engineering moves a lot closer to Future Gaming. It becomes 1100 crore or so of electoral bonds it purchased. So that gives you some insight. Another insight is, of course, to do with the famous Keventers Group. There were four different Keventer Group companies that bought electoral bonds of differing values. But when you add them together, suddenly it becomes the third largest donor to political parties. Of course, we don't know which parties. These companies are Keventers Food Park, MKJ Enterprises, Madanlal Limited, and Sasmal Infrastructure. You can see from the names that there's nothing really connecting them. You actually have to go to the company records to establish a connection. And so that, of course,
you know what? Keventers, I thought, was a brand that I knew as a child, and that brand disappeared around time I became a teenager, right? Because that brand, it was a common milk product brand when we were children, which was some time back, right? If a grandparent got really generous, felt generous or kind, they took you to the shop and bought you a bottle of Keventers Badam milk or something, right? Keventers Badam milk or sweet milk or lassi, stuff like that. So, but that brand disappeared, at least from Delhi it disappeared. And I thought from most of the country it disappeared. And that's when Amul and the rest came in, Amul and Nestle. So I didn't even know Keventers existed as a milk food brand. Maybe in Kolkata it does. But you know, if you look at the balance sheet of that company or these companies and the business of these companies, now, don't be confused by paid up capital. A company can have a very small paid up capital and a very large business. LIC, until it got listed, just had about 100 crore capital.
Just about.
Something
that
like that.
Yes.
So that is, don't get confused by that, because on social media, a lot of people say, oh, itna sazra paid up capital. Paid up capital, it doesn't work like that. But see what is the size of the company's balance sheet. What is the turnover? If you see all of that, it's difficult. It's sort of, it's not impossible. But it's tough to see how Keventers is generating this kind of money and paying out this kind of money for what. And that's where I think as this goes on, this is opinion, as I told you earlier, that I will mostly speak opinion besides asking them questions. As further investigations go on, if genuine investigations go on, particularly because it's Kolkata, which is known to be the center for a lot of the activity of money going from one form to the other. I shall not say any more than that. So this needs more investigation and research to find out how come a company or a group like this was dealing with this kind of money, which is going towards political contributions. The other point is that you, again, a question must have come into your mind, and I see that this being asked all the time, that how come TMC gets more money, say, than the Congress party? Even BRS, which is like TMC, is a one state party. At least TMC is a party in a very large state, that is West Bengal. West Bengal sends 42 MPs to national parliament. Telangana is one of the smaller states, sub 20 MP states in India. How come they got so much money and the Congress got less? So my view on this is that it depends on how much power you have in a particular state, how much favors you can do, what quid pro quos are possible. There are quid pro quos, let's not hide behind anything. And it's not as if only BJP gives quid pro quos. All others do also. So just as it's wrong to say that all the others are sort of pristine and they do no hanky-panky, only the BJP does quid pro quo, it's also wrong to say that the others do quid pro quo and the BJP doesn't. Because one who has money is not stupid. People become rich because they are very smart, not because they are stupid. If people have this kind of spare cash sloshing around, they know what to do with their money, and that's how they're investing it. So when you have a state government that's already well entrenched, as was the case in West Bengal and Telangana, and there is an expectation that this government may come back to power, then you can get quid pro quos earlier while during the incumbency, and you also have the promise of this going ahead. With the Congress party, while it might have a lot of votes scattered all over the country, it has power in too few places, right? If you see this period, it had power maybe in Chhattisgarh, maybe in Rajasthan. Those are not big economic engines. Chhattisgarh has some resources and Chhattisgarh has some strength. So it's possible that some of the stuff got done there, and that's why for Congress, just because it has 20% of the national vote or 19.5% of the national vote, it doesn't mean it will get 1/5 of all the donations. It doesn't work like that. So people who have money are very smart. They know aap kitne pani mein hai. They know how much are you worth today and how much are you likely to be worth tomorrow. So those elements also play out. And that's the reason why some of these regional parties who are very powerful where they are entrenched, they have done so much better. Mm-hmm. Now, Apurva, tell us about some of these exchanges. You said there were sharp exchanges between the judges and the lawyers.
Yes, Shekhar. Actually, there were exchanges when the SBI asked for an extension as well. Like I mentioned, the court asked a senior advocate Harish Salve for SBI, ki what were you doing? What was SBI doing since 15th Feb? Till now, when the hearing has come up and it's filed an application for extension 2 days before the deadline. And as he mentioned, the moment the Supreme Court directed that, they came up within a day. Then there were exchanges. There was another interesting exchange actually when industry bodies approached the Supreme Court as well, asking the court to defer the hearing when it was hearing the application with regard to the alphanumeric numbers, because they felt that this hampers ease of doing business, because the alphanumeric numbers sort of reveal once we have them who donated what. But the court, again, this was Mr. Senior Advocate Mukul Rohatgi, and this application wasn't listed. So there was this whole exchange where the court said that, you know, the application isn't listed, you have to file it properly.
Because he kept on pressing it, and yes. Justice Chandrachud continued to push him back.
Yes, Justice Chandrachud did do that. And he also said that you didn't come when the case was being heard, because he said that industry bodies weren't heard. Rohatgi kept saying that. But CJI Chandrachud said that the case was pending for so long. It had, in fact, the first petition was filed in 2017, even before the scheme came. It was filed right after the amendments. So the court said that this was public knowledge, and if industry bodies had issues, they should have come up earlier as well. So the court didn't defer hearing. So that way, there have been several exchanges. Again, when it was about revealing those alphanumeric codes, so the court really came down heavily on the SBI, saying that, you know, you should have disclosed everything. We shouldn't be asking you for one or two things. But Shekhar, before that, I wanted to ask you, because I want to take advantage of the fact that you're giving opinion here. Now, you mentioned quid pro quo, that it always happens, and you have to acknowledge that. And the Supreme Court, of course, acknowledged that in its judgment on February 15th. And essentially relied heavily on the right of voters to know about this quid pro quo, or you know, have their own conclusions. According to you, this data that we have and we're going to have, how do you think that would impact voters, if at all?
See, first of all, nobody gives anybody money without a quid pro quo.
Right.
Even when somebody goes to a temple, gurdwara, church, a dargah, any place, when you pay money there, you seek a quid pro quo, na? I will give you money, I will give you a donation, upar wala, do something for me, right? Either get me a promotion or get me a lottery or whatever. So money is almost never given unless it's charity or unless it's philanthropy.
Right.
Money is not given without a quid pro quo. And people who might be giving away money without a quid pro quo usually don't earn any money, right? Because everybody doesn't earn that kind of money. So it doesn't work like that. What I find really revolting, and well, more than revolting, revealing also, is the chambers, CII, most respectable, ASSOCHAM, FICCI, going and saying that revealing these numbers impedes our ease of doing business. I mean, what the hell is this business? How dare you call this business? This is not business, for heaven's sake. And if you call it business, that means you are saying that means you are admitting that you are paying this money to further your business. If you are paying money to, you get it right. Either you say that I give money to political parties out of philanthropy, and I say, theek hai, unko bhi lene do, desh mein politics should be clean. In which case, you should have no problem with people knowing who you pay.
Right.
Or if you are saying that this is part of my doing business, right? And I want ease of doing business, and ease of doing business should involve the voter not knowing who I have paid, right? And what decision I might have gotten in return. That, I think, is the cheapest thing. It's opinion. I made it very clear. It is the cheapest thing I have heard Indian chambers say. And I think this is something on which PhD thesis and books should be written about in future, because this is really the premier business chambers of the country saying to us, saying to the country, and saying to the Supreme Court of India that ease of doing business is also defined as crony capitalism. They should stand against cronyism. In fact, that is what the court also said, isn't it?
Right.
They said the voter has the right to know who's getting money from whom, and then what decisions are taking place, etc. That's all part of democracy. That's part of the democratic sunshine. Now, just because people have the money which they can dispense to people, and then to say that no, you are retrospectively revealing this is against ease of doing business. So this retrospectively has become now some kind of a mantra because of the Vodafone case, that because government used a retrospective law in this case. However, this is not even retrospective. So chambers and their lawyers who go and say this in courts, they also think that public is stupid. Everybody thinks public to bevkoof hai, right? Public bevkoof hai, journalists sabse bade bevkoof hai, journalists are the stupidest of all. You might think the judges are stupid, but if you go and insult the judges' intelligence like this, you deserve to be kicked in the shins, and that is exactly what happened in this case. Because I'll tell you why this is not retrospective, because as Apurva will tell you in some detail in a couple of minutes, the 12th April 2019 interim order of the bench headed by Justice Gogoi, that had said that the decision on the bonds, constitutionality of the bonds will be taken subsequently. This is too close to the elections. Elections had already started. The process had already started by mid-May that year. By the middle of the following month, results had come out. So they said this is too close to the elections for us to get into. So in that judgment, Justice Gogoi's bench said that all political parties had to give the data of monies they had received from electoral bonds to Election Commission of India, which was kept in a sealed cover. In fact, that is the sealed cover that the Supreme Court opened, and that is the one that Apurva just mentioned to us about. That's where the Election Commission said, oh, we can't reveal this because we had only one copy, which we gave to you, right? Suppose that copy got lost in transit, iska matlab wo data ke mile hi gaye nahi. So a lot of this tamasha has gone on in this case, and really it's been sad to see the Election Commission of India, State Bank of India, by implication, Government of India, and definitely the the corporate world in India, the chambers, all of those who are represented by the chambers all twisting at the point of the knife held by the Supreme Court of India. So it does look like that all of these institutions showed an inadequate understanding of the Constitution, of the role of the Supreme Court, also of public opinion.
So the court did in fact talk about it. Now there were two sets of data that way. Court had in April 2019 asked political parties to give data to the ECI, which then submitted it in a sealed cover to the Supreme Court. Again in November last year, it asked for a similar exercise and there was sealed cover data up until September 2023. Now, the court said this, and I think this is an understanding that with regard to the companies as well, as you mentioned, the court, when these chambers came forth and said that, you know, this is against ease of doing business and how can this happen because the bonds were supposed to be anonymous. That's what they're contending. The court was very clear. It said that all the donors were put on notice on April 2019.
Yeah, absolutely.
They knew once there's an order that, you know, in a sealed cover, we've already asked for previous data from political parties and that we're going to hear the case on the validity, the constitutional validity of electoral bonds. They were put on notice. And the court also clarified that this is why you see we haven't asked for SBI for data before 2019. Mm-hmm. That data has only come from the sealed cover from self-disclosure of the political parties. But the court said we've been careful. We know what you're talking about. Since the donors didn't know before that, they knew only after. We've only asked for data after April 2019.
So unless you said, oh, my uncle is the Chief Justice or my auntie is another judge who's going to be on the bench and I've told them and they've told me that they will maintain anonymity and they will not rule against it. Unless you say something as touching as that, which obviously is not the case, cannot be the case, then you can't claim anonymity now as a right and also the order to lift the cloak of anonymity as a retrospective change, as a retrospective change which should not have happened. This is something for which the court has already put the donors and recipients on notice on 12th of April 2019. Right. So when they were doing what they were doing after that, they fully knew the consequences of it and they fully knew the possibilities. Sharad, now you tell me, as more data comes out, these alphanumeric numbers or whatever you call them come out, what will that tell us?
That will immediately tell us Company A donated to political party X. And you can draw a direct line and when. When did the, and the thing is that the electoral bonds have a 15-day window, so it's not as if a company can buy it this year and the political party can encash it next year. It's within 15 days, it has to encash it. So you can very immediately and clearly be able to tell. There are various decisions. It's not even things like quid pro quo in a direct sense in terms of raids. There are customs duty exemptions. There are customs duty additions. Like say, for example, just as an example, a steel company, it might be the case that it donates and just a few days later, there's an imposition of a customs duty on steel from
imports,
abroad.
Imports. Or imports, anything. Yes. Steel is just notionally is taken as an example. It can be steel company.
It could be absolutely anything.
It could be anything. It could be a phone importing company or...
Absolutely. And that or whether discussions in the GST council, whether those are being influenced by donations, because there are various industries almost all industries are affected by GST and every industry wants their rate to be lower. And the GST council discusses all of these issues at each of their meetings. They take up various things. For example, lotteries was discussed over several meetings. So it would be interesting to see when and to whom these donations were made, if the connections can be made. So all of that, it gives us a lot of insight.
So this also tells us what a profitable business lotteries must be.
Absolutely.
Right? Because for somebody to be sitting in Tamil Nadu and running this business in so many states and to make, think of the profits it must be generating for them to be able to pay out this kind of money, to be the number one, the top of the pops in the
Absolutely.
Country.
And they say in gambling, they say the house always wins. So
right.
you go and you gamble, but the house always wins. So it's always making money. Whether you win, whether you lose, it's making money. But apart from that, there's one additional data point that I looked at. This is particularly to do with the BJP. And where, as in geographically, where did it get its money from? Bombay tops the list every single year.
You say Mumbai, Mumbai. Say Bombay, and I will get abused.
Yes. So Mumbai tops the list every single year. But between Mumbai and Delhi, they account for about 50% of the BJP's total electoral bonds. Between Mumbai, Delhi and Kolkata, they account for 75%. But the really interesting story is Kolkata, because it also might have political implications, which I don't know enough about. But in 2018-19, so over all of these years, Kolkata accounted for about 1,000 crores going to the BJP. Of that, 2018-19 was nearly 400 crores. And then 2019-20 was almost 650 crores. So just these 2 years, which are just the pre-election years, should tell you something about the BJP, its interests in West Bengal running up to the Lok Sabha elections.
It also tells us something about the geography of corporate India, that Bombay, Mumbai has a lot of contributions. Yes. Delhi has a lot of contributions. Right. Delhi is not really a city which is known to be an engine, one of the engines of corporate India. Kolkata, which is really a laggard in so many ways. In fact, even the BJP's campaign on West Bengal is that you've got left behind industrially. And you can see that West Bengal has got left behind industrially, right? It's got agricultural growth. That area has done well, but not industries. These are the big contributors. Whereas the real engine of India's economy right now, which is Bengaluru, has very little contribution.
Yes,
so
sir.
That tells you also something about the essential nature of the businesses or corporates in the different big metropolis of India, which takes me back to my old thesis. I used to say that Mumbai and New Delhi are two sovereign republics which are yet to establish diplomatic relations. I would now say that Mumbai, Delhi and Bengaluru are three sovereign republics which are yet to establish diplomatic relations. And the longer they don't do it, the better it is, because otherwise they'll catch each other's bad viruses. So that's where you can see how Bengaluru stands out. And we can also see two more such engines coming up now. We see Hyderabad coming up, which is giving Bengaluru competition now, and a lot of the new clean industries coming up there, which doesn't need that much. When I say clean, I don't mean somebody who deals in a commodity is necessarily dirty. What I'm saying is that businesses where interface with the state is very little, is minimal. So you see those coming up, IT, BT, stuff like that. You see a lot of that coming up in Hyderabad. The other city which seems to be emerging as an engine like that is now Pune. And once again, you can see that corporate geography of India reflecting in these electoral bonds as well. Because if you're running a business which stays away from the government, which doesn't need to deal with the state all the time, then you don't feel constrained to pay. Then if you really love somebody, you pay them. Or somebody might say, all right, I want clean politics, I'll pay each side X, 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 like that. Otherwise, you don't need a quid pro quo. So that is also a lesson that we take away. Now, before I let you go, each one of you will tell me, what do we expect over the next few weeks? You will tell me what do we expect from the court, and you will tell me what do we expect as this data comes out. First of all, what do we expect from the data when it comes out?
Of course, by Thursday, it's Thursday by when the SBI has to give the Election Commission the alphanumeric numbers, after which the Election Commission has to make it public. This is the key to the entire thing. It's absolutely astounding that this number, these serial numbers were not released before, and that everything else was also was released before, except for these numbers. They are the key to all of the matching, all of the transparency that we can expect from the electoral funding mechanism that has been set up, that the Supreme Court has shed light on. That light is the alphanumeric number. So as soon as we get that number, we'll immediately know this company has donated to that party. And then we can work on a much firmer footing on what quid pro quo,
what decisions took place for or after this.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And from the court?
For now, so the hearings in the court are over generally. The judgment is out. So this is just compliance that the court is looking at. And this does seem to be the final leg of the compliance once this data is out. Of course, we'll have the affidavit that SBI chairman and managing director will file by 21st March. So we'll have that. Apart from that, if any new applications are filed, we'll see. But otherwise, the court is just looking at compliance for now as such.
You have any advice for SBI chairman now?
He should just, I guess, stick to banking. Don't get involved in politics. Maybe push back if you are being forced. But even if that is not possible all that much, stick to banking. It's what you are good at. It's what you're known for. And it's what is the important role that you play.
And your advice or your view on how the judges have handled this?
I'd say they've actually been very proactive once they took the case. Of course, the case remained, the petitions remained pending for quite some time. Like I mentioned, the first one was filed in 2017. But when they did take up the case, they were very proactive and they were being really pushy even right now on every aspect of the data. So I'd say they have been quite proactive with this.
Sharad, what you said about State Bank of India reminds me of something. So I'm just wording it carefully so as not to be misunderstood. And this is something that was said by Rajkumar, famous for his dialogues in Hindi cinema. And just for clarity, Rajkumar was a good guy in that film. He wasn't a bad guy. He was playing with knives, but wasn't a bad guy. So this is from the great B.R. Chopra classic, Vakht, in mid-60s. Right? So there's a line where the bad guy, he tries to stab Rajkumar and Rajkumar grabs a knife from him and then sort of for a show nicks his hand with the knife, draws a little blood and he says, "Ye bachon ke khelne ki cheez nahi hai. Haath kat jaye to khoon nikal aata hai." So that's a good advice to State Bank of India, that stick to banking. Ye politics bachon ke khelne ki cheez nahi hai. Haath kat jaye to khoon nikal aata hai.